Welcome to Steady She Grows. I'm Casey Jordan, and this is the podcast that is dedicated to giving you an honest look at the realities of being a solo entrepreneur. My guess is that you want to grow a sustainable and feel-good business without burnout and overwhelm. I have a passion for creating clarity out of the chaos that is building a business without a giant budget, without a team of people to manage, and in the hours you choose to work. We're talking about the realities of what it takes to be a solopreneur, both logistically and emotionally. We'll get into the good stuff in literally 60 seconds, but first, a quick shout out to my sponsors. This episode is sponsored by my Strategy Jam sessions. These sessions are hyper-focused on creating clarity and a clear plan of action for whatever you are struggling with in your business today. Whether you need help getting more productive, completing your goals, or growing your visibility, it's only $99 for 90 minutes of one-on-one coaching, including a next step action plan so you stay on track. It's not just fluff coaching. We're creating a real plan of attack for just your needs. Learn more and get signed up at caseyjordan.com/strategyjam. And now to today's episode.
Danielle, welcome to the show. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited too.
All right. So starting out, present tense, tell us what you do for a living, how you make money, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So present tense, I make money as a therapist. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, or LCSW. I like to state that acronym because I didn't know what that meant before I got the degree. So yeah, I work in a private practice and I have my own practice and I see clients every week. And the other things that I do that are also, I'll call them less consistent streams of income that I would love to become a more of a stream of income would be public speaking and my podcast.
Awesome. And tell us the name of your podcast.
It is called Don't Cut Your Own Bangs.
I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll share it. For people who obviously don't have any context for who I am, I learned recently that I need to explain it's not a hair podcast. Yes. So the idea behind Don't Cut Your Own Bangs, it's loosely a metaphor based on like we've all made mistakes, like bad haircuts, and it's okay. It's not permanent. You're not alone and your hair grows back. So it's basically the remedy to comparison.
Yeah. And I love that when you, because we met at She Podcast Live and we were in a session together and you got up to say something and you said the name of your show and I'm like, oh, it must be a hair podcast. And then you're like, and I'm an LCSW, you know, I work in mental health. And I'm like, oh, that is the best name podcast ever. Cause like I instantly saw the connection of like, oh yeah, we've all done that. Like where we're having that like total crisis and it's like, well, I'm just going to do this.
Oh my God. Well, and it's in crisis, like after a breakup or a job change or just, you know, is cursing allowed on your podcast?
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh, okay. So when shit hits the fan, I like to ask, cause I curse on my podcast, but some
I always
people...
forget to mention that. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Okay, great. Perfect. We're in good company. So, but yeah, when shit hits the fan, it's like, we want that instant gratification to make us feel better. And we usually aren't in a good place to make those, I'll say semi-permanent decisions. Just don't get a tattoo. I mean, if you want to cut your bangs, great. Just don't get a tattoo.
Right. Yeah.
Wait, just wait.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I remember the last time I had like the big life change and I walked into my stylist and I'm like, I'm dyeing my hair blue. And she's like, so what went wrong this week?
Yep. They know. God, stylists know.
She is my other therapist. Like I have a paid therapist and then I have a stylist and she does like the in-between work.
Yes. Yeah. There's so much more. There's so many different forms of therapy that don't actually involve therapy that are valid and necessary. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. All right. So now we know what you're doing currently. Let's go back to the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. Where did you start with kind of your entrepreneurship and like getting into private practice?
Gosh. So I don't know if you want the long version. So yeah, I guess I don't know if you want the long version or the abbreviated version.
Do we have an intermediate option?
Yeah. Let's go. I'll try. Okay. Brevity is not normally my strength, but I'm going to try. God, where did my entrepreneurial journey begin? So my previous life before I decided to go to grad school and become a therapist, I taught ballroom dance and I did that for 7 years. Wow. Yeah. So I got a theater arts degree and I minored in digital media marketing. And it was under the digital marketing program, but it was actually digital storytelling. So I taught dance for 7 years and I worked in the arts and I was a commercial actor and performer. So I've always done multiple things. And I, for a long time, I think I carried a lot of shame around that because I thought like I would see people around me who, you know, I grew up and I knew I wanted to be a teacher and I became a teacher and now I teach, or, you know, I want to be a doctor and I went to med school and now I'm a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I really envied those people for a long time, but that was just never my path. Even when I loved something that I was doing, I always liked having my hands in multiple things. And I didn't see that as an asset or a strength for a long, long time. And honestly, still sometimes I kind of kick myself for it, or I'm still working through that. But to answer your question, I did Marie Forleo's B School around year 7 of my ballroom dance career because I could feel internally that I needed a shift. I needed to make a transition. I had that pull, but I didn't have a sense of direction. And so I had been receiving her newsletters and watching her videos once a week for about a year before I felt like I had that trust and that buy-in to invest in her program. And when I took it, it was great. It was really inspiring, really energizing. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna do consulting of some kind. Cause with dance, you know, there's a lot of makeup and a lot of spray tan and a lot of hair and a lot of sparkle. And I thought, yeah, like I'll just help people with makeup. I didn't know that was actually like Insta blogging or like I didn't know what I was saying. I was basically wanting to be was like an Insta influencer.
Right.
I did air quotes just then, but I was like, yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll like help people shop and I'll help people put on makeup. So I created a landing page. I call it digital macaroni art because it was awful. It was so bad. I did it all myself. And built this landing page, and I think it was called Beautiful Natural You. And yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was really surprised that people started coming to me and wanting to know about foundation and then wanting to know about how to wear a scarf. And so I was having fun with it. But in the process of walking people through that kind of external stuff, mm-hmm. eventually the conversation, once they built trust with me, they would turn into internal stuff. Like I would have women share with me, I just had my third kid and my husband doesn't seem sexually attracted to me and I want to feel pretty and I don't know mm-hmm. how to address that. Or, you know, I'm just in a lot of pain. I lost a baby and, you know, I just want something to make me feel better. Or, you know, they would kind of open up and get really vulnerable with me. And I remember every time that would happen, I would feel these tingles. It was like it kind of lit me up inside. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh my God, all I want to do is talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. As much as I enjoy and still enjoy, I'll say, I don't know, the fun things, the external things, I think that definitely has a place. But it lit me up inside to have those, I don't want to call them real conversations because it's not like the other conversations aren't real,
right.
But I don't know. It just lit. What's that?
Deeper conversations.
Yeah. That's a really good way of saying it. I got lit up with these deeper conversations, but I felt so ill-equipped. And so I kept kind of censoring myself and saying, well, in my experience or well, in my opinion, but that was sort of what led the trail to what eventually became therapy. And I think that probably took a year and a half from discovering that I was excited about that kind of conversation to actually taking the plunge and applying for grad school.
Awesome. Wow. That is, yeah, quite the journey. So mm-hmm. how long have you been a therapist now?
3 years.
3 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. I started around the timeline because I was like, well, if you did 7 years of the dance stuff, like
I'm 35.
I know you're not that much old. Like, yeah, so we're the same age. I'm like, I know you're mm-hmm. not that old. Like, mm-hmm. try to run the numbers. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That, like, I relate to like kind of back to the multi-passionate part of it. Like mm-hmm. I so deeply feel that because I struggle with the same thing. Like I have ran everything from web design business, t-shirt company, woodworking. I've played a million sports and it became a joke in my family about like, how long is this fad going to last? Mm. And so like, I really took it in as like, a negative. Mm-hmm. I want to do everything. And if I'm interested in, even if I love it, like I might do a lot more of it or stick with it longer, but like I keep changing things and experimenting. And yeah, I think that's such a valuable acknowledgement that we mm-hmm. don't talk about that, like that multi-passionate wanting to do different things at once, that's not a bad thing. And not knowing what you want to be when you grow up. Like,
yes,
you know, I'm 35 also. I don't suspect that I will run this business doing business strategy for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like,
You know, Elizabeth Gilbert did a talk through, I think it was like Oprah's Life class 3 or 4 years ago. If anyone can find the link to that video, I highly encourage watching it. But she talked about how for years and years when she would go on book tours, she would tell people like, find your passion, follow your passion, passion, passion. And what she began to uncover is some people had that singular focus and that singular vision for what they wanted their life to be their whole life. And passion is great to sort of spearhead that vision. And then she said that, I think the metaphor she uses is that there are jackhammers and there are hummingbirds, and that she's a jackhammer. She was like, I'm here to write, and I'm going to go down and down and down and down and down and down until I uncover these jewels in my writing. And then there are people that are hummingbirds. And she said that she preached passion for so long, but realized the people that she loved most in her life had a journey that was very different than hers. Like, I think her partner, Ray Elias, who I think passed away about a year ago, she was a rock star, and then she was a realtor, and then she was a this, and then she was a this. And she really explained in a way that's probably better than what I'm doing, that there are people that kind of cross-pollinate passion and ideas and they sort of sprinkle it around. And then there are some people who do have the one vision. Yeah. And it was really affirming to hear that, because I was like, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. I love that jackhammer versus hummingbirds. Like, that makes so much sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find, like, the one that I've kind of taught, because I am that hummingbird type, is like also finding the thing that's right for you. So you find that thing that you're passionate about. So I actually, my education is in therapy. I was a therapist for a couple of years, and I am fascinated by like the hard grief and trauma work. Like I say, I love it, but that's like it doesn't sound right.
I know what you mean though. I know. Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, yes, yes.
Like, it's such rewarding work. Mm-hmm. And it lights me up inside, but I have my own trauma issues, and it took such a negative toll outside of my work that it was like all I could be was a therapist. And then when I came home, I completely shut down. Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, for me, as much as I still love that work, I couldn't balance it and still have a life outside of that. So I walked away from being a therapist. But now I'm circling back around. We're training the lab puppy to be, hopefully her and I are going to be a therapy team. And so I'm going to be able to kind of engage back in the community, but not as a full-on therapist, but kind of be there in those hard moments, those hard places, but kind of have the dog, you know, as a buffer for both me and them. But, you know, it's like finding how it works well for you also.
I think that's one of the gifts too of having an entrepreneurial spirit, is that, you know, it's hard enough to kind of like dig down into like the core of who you are and figure out, what do I value? What lights me up? What do I enjoy? And then what I've seen entrepreneurs do is kind of forge their own path, or make their own way to bring the things they want to do into their day as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I got really stuck on in my 20s and in my early 30s, because even when I was teaching dance, like I would go part-time for a while and think I wanted to do this type of career. And then I would come back full-time like, no, that wasn't it. And I think what's hard is that if you're only looking at what exists currently as a path for you, like, oh, I have a strong desire to teach. I have no desire to be in a classroom. I have zero desire to be in a classroom. And so I didn't know that public speaking or like workshops or training could help me flex that muscle that I love, but in a way that worked for me and it served me. And I think that's one of the gifts and great things that entrepreneurs do, is they get a little crafty with how they can fold in all the things that they like.
Right. Well, that's the perfect example. So me becoming a business strategist was because my husband told me I wasn't allowed to open any more businesses. Like, I love starting businesses. I love the first 2 to 3 years where it's new and exciting and you're testing and like putting things out there. And he was like, okay, like pick a thing and stick with it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to start a business that's helping other people start their businesses so that I get to like, you know, work around the rules where I guess I'm going to dabble in everybody else's excitement, but technically I'm in the same business, you know?
Yeah. Love it. That's ingenious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You find a way to make it work and figure out what it is that works. Yeah. So talk to me about kind of the mindset of going like from dance, kind of that year and a half where you were starting to mm-hmm. experiment and enjoy that deeper part of it, like the growth that happened there.
Oh, I love that you said enjoyed that process. I hated that process. It was so hard. So I've learned to really become hyper aware of my body's stress response, not stress response when I'm actually like in threat of danger, but my stress response when it's, you know, sometimes I tell clients like, you can't die from a broken heart. It just feels like you can. And so I felt like I experienced like a series of like little mini deaths in that process to really figuring that out, because I would get what I'll call like a whisper, and then this glimmer of an idea, or an idea would start to take shape, or I'd get a little nugget of information, and I would feel kind of that flutter of excitement, like when those women would kind of open up and be vulnerable with me. Mm-hmm. So I would feel that gentle pull into a direction, and then my logical thinking brain would slam shut, and it would shut me down. And I don't even know if, actually, to be fair, I don't know if it was my logical brain. I think it was probably shame. It was that, who do you think you are? You're a theater kid. No one's going to take you seriously. You don't even have all the credits you need to go apply to grad school. Why don't you just take a nap and stop pretending? And then, but then that rumbling, that wrestling, that pull wouldn't go away. And so eventually I would get so uncomfortable in my own head that it would push me to take another step. And I've learned that that's actually not a necessary part of my process. I'm just trying to trust that whisper a little more. Right. So I don't think motivation has to be quite so toxic, but so it was really a series. And I think even in the bios I use when I submit applications to speak, it's like a series of like intuition, fear, sweat, step, repeat. And that just seems to be that process. Like I'll get an idea, then I'm terrified, then I perspire a lot, and then I kind of shut down, and then I take a small step forward, and the process starts again. And I think I still go, because it's the same when I perform or when I would step out to perform. I had this like progression of I would, so it would start with like before I would step out on stage to perform, I would have almost like this level of confidence that makes no sense. Like I'm the most brilliant dancer ever and this is going to be amazing. And then my mind would get very quiet. And then I would doubt all my choices and I would panic and want to just throw in the towel and run away. And then right before the music would start, I'd be convinced I was going to pee. I was going to wet my pants. And then the music would start and I'd be fine. So, and it's in my creative journey in other ways, it's the same. It's the same, and it's all some different version of fear.
Yeah. There's a really great quote, and I'll totally butcher it. I don't actually remember, but it's something along the lines of when like the pain of standing still, when the pain of taking that step forward finally overrides the pain of standing still. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, and that's where like, I tell people all the time, I'm like, don't care, take the first step and see what happens. Like you will get more clarity. You will get answered. Like I used to feel bad because I spent 3 years, you know, I got a master's degree in counseling. Mm-hmm. And then I worked as a counselor for like a year and left the industry. And it was like,
yeah,
quote unquote, waste of time. But I loved what I did. I love learning. So it was a fun experience. I wouldn't have known if I didn't go through the whole process. Mm-hmm. And in reality, like being a therapist, like having that background applies, like we were saying earlier, to a lot of different areas of life. Like I also do fitness coaching on the side for fun. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many people at the end of a workout get really vulnerable about what's really going on in life.
Oh, I bet. I can 100% relate to feeling like wasted time. Again, I graduated with a theater degree with a concentration in film. Like I've done commercial acting pretty much since I was 13, and I was so sure I knew what my life path was going to be. And then I took a hard right turn when I was 22 and I was like, I can't do it. I can't go to LA. I can't do it. And so I felt like a failure for a long time, but now it's almost like that is the gift in hindsight in a way, because when you're in it, you can't see how those steps connect, but I'm sure I'm very confident that the knowledge that you have in the background you have as a therapist makes you a more effective coach and trainer with the people that you work with. And I think being able to kind of balance both worlds, I have a few friends that are great coaches and the coaches who have done their own mental health work and really understand that. Some clients come to me for therapy, but what they really want is a coach. Like they want to set goals and they want accountability. And I'm like, oh no, no, that's not what this is. And then there are some people who go to a coach because maybe they're sidestepping some trauma or they're sidestepping a tougher conversation. And they're hoping they can just, you know, kind of crunch their way through by getting some goals accomplished, and that may not be effective for them either. And so, I mean, you have sensitivity in both mm-hmm. spaces.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which actually leads perfectly into my next question. What led you to LCSW and therapist and private practice versus life coaching or something like that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what that was, I don't know exactly when in that year and a half journey of figuring this out. I can't remember exactly how that all came together, but I remember one of my professors, and I was his assistant. He was a theater history professor and now the associate dean for the theater arts program at Ball State where I went. And he's always been like, kind of like my Dumbledore. And I say that in part because he has like white hair and a white beard too. But I needed someone who wasn't immediately invested in the outcome of what I chose. I needed to bounce that idea off of someone. And also I wanted someone who didn't have necessarily an opinion of what they thought I should do based on what they need from me. And so I knew enough that I wanted to do something, but I wasn't brave enough or bold enough or had enough information to sort of announce that. And so I took him to lunch and basically said, these are the things that I really like. These are the things that I want to try to spend more time doing, but I don't know what this looks like. And I'm pretty sure I said, I think this is a therapist or a counselor, but I don't know. Cause at the time I was like, is that a PhD? Is that a psych degree? Like, is that, am I going to school for 13 years? Am I going to school for four? Like, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like what does it actually take to even be a therapist? Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And so again, having no context for social work or like licensed marital family therapist, that's an LMFT. Like I didn't know all these acronyms existed, what they meant. And then I didn't know the scope of what that would allow me to do. And so when I was deciding between social work and these other options, the reason why I chose social work was large in part because the scope of the field was so broad that I felt like, you know, whether I wanted to work in nonprofit or if I wanted to develop programs, I felt like it gave me a foundation for that. And so, and I'm such a freedom seeking being, like freedom is one of my core values. And so I liked that degree, even though I knew pretty specifically what I wanted to do with it, I needed options that felt like less pressure to me. And so that's ultimately why I landed on that.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So what's the question I'm looking for? Where'd you end up? So your private practice, you run your own clinic or are you working in someone else's?
So yeah, another good question. So the private practice that I'm working through is called Healing Hearts of Indy. And all of the therapists that work through Healing Hearts of Indy are contracted, not employed. So I'm technically my own individual little entity and business within an umbrella. And that was such a great place for me to step out and start because I didn't necessarily know how to market myself or generate leads. I didn't fully understand like, how do I cover myself with insurance? And now with technology, like a lot of people want to do sessions through either FaceTime or over the phone. And there's actually something called cyber insurance. It sounds like robot insurance, but I mean,
That's cool.
Yeah. So I had a really great guiding hand in sort of establishing my practice, but now I'm pretty secure that I'm my own sort of like I'm a pretty self-generating machine now. Like I don't take referrals from the practice anymore. It's been great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that makes great sense. Cause like the leap from, you know, getting your degree into launching your own practice is like just so many details about running a business and the logistics. And like you said, the insurance and just the industry itself, that makes sense to kind of go through. That's a cool way to do it where you're a contractor, not an employee. So you are still your own.
Yeah. My own little entity. Yeah.
Yeah. But you have kind of that, especially starting out having that kind of support network and referral network and very cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned also, so you want to do more public speaking and more with your podcast. Tell me about that process, the starting of both, like getting into those and like, what are you doing to grow those? Where is that going?
Great, great questions. So with the podcast one first, so I really took going to grad school, like I used basically what I did is the essence of words that I don't like using anymore, but like grinding and hustling and all that bullshit. I'm like, you got to grind and you got to hustle and you got to, I just I'm over it. But I did, I kind of buried my head in a book and I didn't come up for air for 2 years. Cause I think I was so panicked that I was going to lose it all if I gave myself a break for just a second. So I kind of ground through school. I graduated on May 15th. And I began my first day on May 18th. So I didn't even like decompress. I was just like, go, 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 go. And coming out of that process, I realized how depleted I was, creatively speaking. I didn't give myself permission to really do much, not just self-care and the like sense of taking bubble baths and going to yoga classes, but the stuff that really fills me up and feeds me. Mm-hmm. And because I put performing on a shelf for 2 years. And so pretty quickly after I started doing this work, I also realized how much of my job is not speaking, it's listening. And mm-hmm. I wanted an outlet for both. And so I thought to myself, I think I want to start a podcast. And then I started speaking that goal. I learned from my previous mistake of a year and a half suffering in silence before talking with someone. And so I kind of sat with the idea for a week or two. And then when I would be around people that were just in general asking how I was doing, I was speaking my goal out loud. Like, I think I want to make a podcast. I think I want to make a podcast. And this is what I think I want it to be about. And then about 3 months later, the title came to me. And I was like, oh my God. And then it just felt more real. And I felt like I was getting more momentum. And then a conversation that I had with someone was, oh, you need to meet this person. She produces podcasts. And then it just kind of built momentum. But that same fear process that I described earlier, like it was like little mini doses of that for 6 months to actually make season one and learn the technology and do all the things. And then I still remember the day that iTunes approved my podcast. I was on cloud a million, not even cloud nine. Like I was like, I'm on iTunes. But so that was how the podcast came to be. And as far as what I'm doing to build that into my business, it's actually been, it does a couple of things for me. It helps me provide additional value or content for maybe potential clients where the topics we're speaking about is relevant. I don't talk about my podcast with all my clients because it's not relevant to everyone. But for the people that it is, I find it's just another great way to add value without asking them for more from me. Like I'm not paying. And it just, I find in a business sense and in a human sense, it feels a little generous. And I think it just helps build trust. It's also helped people connect with me locally who have found the podcast that maybe have been thinking about trying therapy, but it's so hard to, all you're looking at is profiles online. It's exhausting. And so I think it gives some people or has given some people a sense of who I am and what my personality is like. And so that when they come in for an appointment or they feel like making an appointment, a lot of that relationship building, I don't want to say it's been done, but it kind of warms the initial interaction. Like it goes from a cold lead to a warm lead. Yeah. And then, I mean, I would love somehow for it to also generate revenue either through sponsorship or whatever other possibilities out there. But I don't know yet really how to make that happen. I'm still discovering. Mm-hmm. And then did you ask how my speaking folds into that too?
Kind of the same with the speaking. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did in my first couple of years, I kind of jumped right out of the gate doing speaking events. I just started applying for them. But I think because I felt like I just need to get out there and I just need to do it, I didn't stop and think about getting paid. So I just was like, okay, I'm just going to go and I'm going to speak and I'm going to do. And I did that pretty consistently for like a year and a half. I just went and speak here and I'd speak there and it felt really good and it was really fun. But then I started becoming friends with a small local community of people who also did training and speaking and made a living doing that. And I was like, oh, I can get paid doing this? Like, wow, like people make money with this. So this past year, like of 2019 that we're almost done with, has been me trying to kind of parse through like, well, what would I charge and what am I comfortable asking for? And what if they don't say it? Like, what if that's not in their budget? So that's definitely an evolving process for me. I don't know if I have any super, super concrete answers, but I think the biggest thing I'm trying to do is approach this not like a hobby and approach it like it's like a business. And it also is helping me. It's also helping me, I think, dig a little deeper into my own worthiness and giving myself permission to admit like, oh yeah, I deserve to get paid for this work that I'm doing. I didn't get my degree for free. So,
right. Yeah. I think it's funny because I think like entrepreneurship as a whole is like one of the biggest like personal development tasks you can take on. And I think for me, because I'm trying to add more speaking and paid speaking as well, is like that has been like a whole nother level because it is so much more about me because I'm going to be the one on stage. And it's like, yeah, my worthiness of do I know this topic well enough to be telling other people about it? And do I know it well enough on top of that to ask them to pay me for it? Like I was just sitting, I co-work with a friend every week and I was sitting there going through speaking events, looking for things to apply to. And she had just been telling me, she's like, yeah, I struggle with, you know, this imposter syndrome. And as I'm going through this list of speaking events, I'm like, I suck at life. I suck at my job. I'm not capable of any of this. And I just look at her and I'm like, yeah, you're not alone. I am having a crisis of confidence right now, trying to pick an event to apply to.
Oh, crisis of confidence. That is juicy. I like that a lot. Yeah. The imposter syndrome. God, I hate it so much, but it's so real. And I just wonder sometimes, like if that weren't there, what would be existing in my life right now?
But, yeah. That's one of the ones, you know, you kind of touched on this earlier. Like one of the things that I try to remind myself, especially when it comes to speaking, is like where you were talking about that moment right before you walked on stage where like all the world was falling apart. Like my husband always, he's like, why do you like public speaking? You completely panic before. And I do the same thing. Like I apply, I'm king of the world because I got accepted, queen of the world. Like I'm going to do this thing, best keynote they're ever going to listen to. Oh crap, I have to go do this event today. I'm not ready. I'm worthless, you know, and then I get off stage and I get that feedback. And I finally realized a couple of events ago, like I literally survived being blown up in Iraq. So when I get on stage, like my new motto is like, well, at least it's not going to kill me.
Yes.
And all of a sudden my level of fear for stepping on stage has shifted because of that perspective. Like I literally survived somebody trying to kill me. Nobody's trying to kill me here. Like all I got to do is get up here and talk.
That is powerful. That is extraordinarily powerful. And I don't know if I knew you were a veteran, but thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I have like a handful of little nuggets or affirmations that I remind myself that have been helpful for me. One is this is temporary.
Yeah.
One is this isn't about you. Because I think when I allow myself to get hyper-focused on my nerves, it's usually my ego saying like, well, what are they going to think of me? And are they going to like me? And are they going to think I'm smart? And are they going to da, da, da? But that's like the little me worrying about myself. And so when I can try to get more focused on these people have been sitting down, listening to other people talk for the last 3.5 hours, right? They're on their fifth cup of coffee and all they've had to eat is a banana. They, you know, they just need like, they like, how can I make this a non-sucky experience for them for the next 45 minutes to an hour or whatever it is. And I try to think like, yeah, what can be the most valuable to these people listening? And then another one that I thought of that I really liked, and it just, I think it's just cause it's almost like a nice alliteration that when you get nervous, focus on service again. So the more I focus on serving a purpose rather than focusing, hyper-focusing on myself, that kind of helps me get out of my own way too. But I think the people who I really see as like pillars of public speaking and just sharing great light and great messages, they all in their own way, even in seasoned in their career, say that like, I'm never not completely nervous before I start. And I think that that in a small way can speak to just a fair amount of humility and humanness that I hope never completely goes away. I just don't want it to shut me down.
Exactly. Same. Like, I don't ever expect to not be nervous at all or to deal with some of these feelings. I just don't want it to stop me from that event or from mm-hmm. moving forward for 6 months, or like for me to shut down the fear for launching this podcast. I did the grind, like mm-hmm. from idea to launch date was like 16 days.
What?
Because it was like, if I stop and think about this, I'm going to talk myself out of it. Mm-hmm. But I know deep down it's a good idea. So just fucking run with it. And then yeah. once it's launched, and same thing, like when iTunes approved it, like happy dance in the office, like I have mastered this. And now it's out there. And since my show is interview based, like, I have to put all these interviews that I did out there. These people are going to be mad at me. Like, now I'm committed. Here we go. We have a podcast, you know.
It's that there's definitely something to be said for like the cannonball approach of diving into a project versus like dipping your toe in uh-huh. and like easing yourself in until your body yeah. temperature adjusts. Cause I think it's either a book or an expression or maybe both, but like, don't let your greatness get in the way of your goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that is, I mean, what you just did is probably a great remedy for perfectionism.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, I'm just going to do it. And it's not going to be it's not going to be perfect. It's going to be what's yep. going to be, yep. but it's out there.
Yeah. My audio for like the first five episodes is all jacked up. Like, and I fixed it the best I could. And then I learned there's a couple of settings in Zoom that I should have changed so that it wouldn't do that to me. And I was like, oh, well, okay. Moving forward, I now have that fixed. And yeah, and I wouldn't recommend that approach to everybody because it was right. definitely at the end of about the first month, I kind of didn't want to ever look at my podcast again because it was like all I did for like 3 weeks was back-to-back interviews. But yeah, it's definitely approach. And as someone who struggles with the perfectionism, like I have found that sometimes it's the good approach for me because yeah. I just push through it. It's out there. Once it's out there, I can tweak and adjust and nothing's permanent, then I can go back and
yeah.
kind of tinker. I'm playing with different episode styles now and other things like that. And that's okay. Like it's always evolving. It's always growing.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like if what your content is speaking to is like evolving, growth, learning and process, then you're actually embodying that in the work you're putting out. And I kind of gave myself a similar permission slip when I started this. I'm like, oh, I'm talking about the messy middle. What really kind of lit a fire under me to do my podcast was I felt like I was seeing a lot of before and after pictures, literally and metaphorically. Like mm-hmm. people were really comfortable talking about, you know, what they achieved. Like, look what I did. And I get that. My goodness. Like, yes, if you got trophies and medals, honor them. Put them on your Insta story and like get the praise, clappy hand emojis. And like, that's all fun. But what I felt like I was missing in that story was, you know, once upon a time, I used to feel like crap about myself, but now I'm amazing. And whether that was a fitness journey or whether that was a professional journey or a personal one, I was comparing my struggle or my, like, I don't know. I was comparing my hard moments with these people's big wins and successes. And so because I only saw point A to point F, mm-hmm. I was like, wait, where's all that space in between? And so that's pretty much all I want to talk about with people.
Yeah.
Not necessarily even just with career, but with personal experiences too. Now, the first three seasons of my podcast, I primarily focused on career, but I've recently took a pretty big, pretty hard dip in my journey to become pregnant. I was pregnant and I was three months pregnant. And then my 12th week before we did the gender reveal, I miscarried. Oh. And I'm still exploring and still trying to discover how certain moments in life like that can be shared in a meaningful way that mm-hmm. doesn't also feel like I'm trying to elicit sympathy. Mm-hmm. or validation that I'm not really even asking for. Mm-hmm. But for me, I've really sat with the last couple months, how I'm like, this is necessary though, because say I do get pregnant, say I do have all of those things, like the things that the people post is like, we're pregnant announcement, cute photo. And then it's like, we have a shower, cute photo announcement. And then here's my baby. And like, you know, we're, here we are in the hospital. And like, if I only shared that, but I didn't also talk about this, I felt like, or I feel like that there's something missing, at least for me personally, just based on my values and the work that I do. So a big part of what I'm trying to open up into season 4 that I'm recording now is to kind of open up the conversation and the journey beyond work mm-hmm. and career. And what does that messy middle of someone's journey look like in other areas of life too?
I love that. I feel that on so many levels. And like, that's why I talk about like being a veteran in my business. Like I live with post-traumatic stress and a brain injury that makes me better at my job because I have to think outside the box compared to a lot of business strategists, I feel like, because I remember what my brain was like before my injury and what I deal with now. So I have like two very different sets of tools that I've used in my life. And like, but you need to understand that I survived getting blown up and went through 5 or 10 years of very unhealthy coping to get to where I'm at. Like it's like, oddly enough, I am a business strategist because I got blown up and like nobody sees that. That point A to point F doesn't make any sense unless I share all of the messy steps in between. And that's at some level, that was where this podcast came from too, is we talk about, you know, six-figure years and six-figure launches and like, but what about the first 3 years? What about the first year? Like 90% of businesses don't survive the first year. Like, A, I want to change that statistic. And B, I want to talk about how you get through, you know, like the first 3 years suck.
Well, when you were talking about your podcast and how you kind of like ground, like you went to the grindstone the first 3 weeks, what I remember, someone told me that statistically most podcasts don't make it past episode 6. So I was like, all right, gotcha. I'm going to get 10 in the can before I even launch. And so that's what I did. I was like, okay, so if I make it past that, then I'm gold and I'm in.
Yep.
But, and you know what? It probably doesn't matter what that number is. If they said most people don't make it past 10, I'd be like, all right, here we go, 20.
Right. Exactly. Here we go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm like counting the days down to like, okay, this business has been official for more than a year. Like I've beat the statistic. I'm into year 2. Yeah.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. But we have to talk about those hard points and we get so focused, like you said, on the before and after, but like,
yeah,
how did you get there? Like you said, I don't care if it's fitness, business, dancing, whatever, like how did you get from point A to point B, you know, point F? Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really vulnerable conversation to have because I think because the middle is not pretty and the middle is where all the work is. But I think I'm pretty sure this is what Brene Brown has said before. I don't know if I'm quoting. It's hard to know sometimes where my mind is now, like what's me and what's someone else's idea. So I always try to overgive credit because I'm like, right. I don't want to steal an idea. Yeah. But the middle is messy and that's where the magic happens.
Yes.
Because that's where the transformation happens. That's where the growth happens. Yeah. That's where the effort that goes into the middle is what makes act 3 rewarding. You know, if you're thinking in terms of story structure, I mean, I also think that's a big part and why this is just a theory. I don't know how much is actually behind this, but I think it's a big part of why streaming shows and like people like binging Netflix has become such a part of our vernacular. But I think it's because we're so hungry in our own lives to have an adventure and to have a journey. Mm-hmm. And if we're only talking about before and after, then what we're not doing is we're not sharing the only interesting part. Like literally, sorry, I'm jumping all over the place, but like Lord of the Rings, for example. So they find the One Ring and the rest of the movie is act 2, right? It's like they decide to go on a quest and the rest of the journey is the fucked up messy middle on the way to Mordor. And then like the last 30 minutes is the end. But like we get swept up and inspired by watching other people go through act 2 or the middle of whatever that adventure is. Yeah. And so it's been and is still a journey for me to try to figure out how I can really sit with and appreciate that mess because I would much rather just post a cleaned up, pretty photo and not talk about it, but it's necessary.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that leads perfectly into the end of every episode. I ask the same three questions to every guest, and I never warn you guys this because I don't want you to pre-think about it too much.
Perfect.
So this is kind of talking about the messy middle a little bit. What has been one of your biggest wins in the entrepreneurship journey?
Oh gosh, I've had a couple of really great wins, but I would say I have had clients who I've been able to walk alongside through just really tough moments in their life, like thinking they were going to get divorced and they didn't get divorced, or thinking they were going to get divorced and they got divorced and it was the best thing for them. But hearing from them in various ways, either through reviews or an email or telling me in person how much the work we did together made a positive impact on their life, that just makes my heart sing. And I had it also on with the podcast. I've had a couple of women tell me that they were inspired to do a podcast after listening to mine. And so I was like, done. Yep. I'm done. Perfect.
I love it. Yes. Yes. Knowing that it gets bigger than us and that it's connecting somewhere. Yes. I love that.
Yeah.
So what has been one of the hardest lessons you've had to learn along the way?
That I can't do it all myself and that I have to ask for help. And that asking for help means that I'm admitting that people know more than I do about something. And that's not failure or weakness. It's like the best/hardest thing for me right now.
I feel that at my core. Yep. All right. And then the last one, if you had one piece of advice that you wish you had known sooner in this journey, what would it be?
That fear is always going to be a companion, a part of, and on the journey. Like, I think I kept waiting to feel comfortable before I would start. And that's probably why I waited so long in some ways. So like all that fear is recognition that it matters to me, and then just move alongside with the fear rather than waiting for the fear to go away.
I love that fear is a recognition that it matters to you. Mm-hmm. That I think that's huge. We get so busy thinking fear is bad,
right?
But we're not going to feel the fear if we don't give a shit.
Exactly. So exactly.
That means it's something we need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Oofta.
Oh, good.
I love it. Yes. That is such a good one. Oh, well, that's the show. Tell us more where we can find you, where we can remind us the name of your podcast, all those good details.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. So the name of my podcast is Don't Cut Your Own Bangs, and my name is Danielle Ireland. So I'm pretty sure if you go on iTunes and you search Don't Cut Your Own Bangs, or if you search Danielle Ireland, you'll find me. I'm also on Spotify. For some reason, it's a little harder to search for me on Spotify. I think because a couple of singers also named Danielle Ireland. So if you type Don't Cut Your Own Bangs, you should be able to find me. Also my website, danielleireland.com. My podcast is on there. Blogs are on there. Videos are on. There's all kinds of different ways you can connect with my content if you would like through that.
Awesome. And I will make sure that stuff is also linked up in the show notes so it's easy to find. Danielle, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in for another week of Steady She Grows. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to screenshot the show and give it a share over on Instagram. Tag me at casey.jordan and share your key takeaways. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcast or wherever you give it a listen. And until next week, my friends, keep on crushing it.